to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who loves it when fall is in the air, still waiting for those leaves to change, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian!
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everybody. I am, you move out of California. You've been gone for like a month, and all of a sudden you believe in seasons are a thing?
Seasons everywhere, Christian. It's the most glorious thing. You can't believe it. It blows your mind.
Yeah. So no, there's no such thing. It is still, we have seasons here too. We are still in the middle of wildfire season, unfortunately, which is becoming longer and longer every year. But that also causes the leaves to change color, just in a very sadder, much more tragic way.
Yeah. And you know how people always say only 300 more shopping days till Christmas. People in California say only 4 more days until fire season, because it's always only 4 days away.
It's real bad.
I went to Breckenridge for the first time this weekend as we continue to explore our new Colorado area, or new to us, I should say. And it was absolutely amazing to see trees changing color and being able to wear a sweater. Ugh, what a thing. What a thing most people in the world experience, and not me, for my entire life.
I can't wait to get your Christmas card this year where you're like in snow, doing snow stuff with snow. Usually it's like board shorts and hanging out. This year, the Cannatas are all in, baby.
Yeah, we're all in. We'll see how long we like snow. But for the first year, it's going to be amazing. Hey, we got an awesome show for you. We're going to be talking Nintendo in a big way, because they came hard and heavy with their Nintendo Direct for September. And we've got games to talk about, the fall games. I mean, talking about leaves changing, the other sign of fall is that games start coming out in a big way. And we've got games to discuss. Luckily, we also have an awesome guest to discuss them with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, once again, DLC stands for driving lots of content, because we have game streamer extraordinaire, our friend Tim Trixler Frazier, joining us once again. Hey, Trixler, what is up?
What is up, Jeff and Spice Man? It's been a while since we've been on, but I was looking forward to hanging out with you guys once again. I did want to mention, you left us, and we actually have had 2 thunderstorms in California since you left. 2 actual rain thunderstorms with thunder and lightning and rain.
And one of them caused a wildfire. So, it still fits the theme.
You also had, I had that moment where, for the first time in my entire life, you know, since the advent of Twitter, earthquake, LA earthquake Twitter went off, and I wasn't there. I wasn't part of it. I've always been the guy saying, I felt it. You know,
you missed the whole wave, all the free impressions, the free engagements.
Yeah, not me. I was like, wow. No longer will I be woken up in the middle of the night to the shaking of my house.
No, I've already booked my tickets. Trixler and I both. We're going to fly there. Your wife's going to let us in. And we're just going to shake the crap out of your bed one night at just 3 a.m. and then leave and just let you know what it's like.
Well, it's so nice. We have the air conditioner in my house is pretty intense, like when it kicks on. and the first couple of nights we were here, both my wife and I were like, earthquake! Oh, wait, no, we don't have to worry about that anymore. So I suspect that if you do that plan and you start shaking my bed, I'll just sleep sublimely through it, because I'll know, I don't have to stress about earthquakes anymore.
Did the person who sold you your house tell you that that quarter 25-cent machine thing that you put next to your bed is an air conditioner? Because, Jeff, that is not what that house was used for, apparently.
it's the honeymoon suite in my
perfect. Wow. Nice. Jealous of you.
We got a real deal on this place. Anyway, enough about that nonsense. Let's jump in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story. story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. And usually, we let everybody pick their own story of the week. But really, this week, there's only one big thing that happened. I mean, maybe a couple. But basically, it was Nintendo Direct. So, in lieu of asking you, Trixler, what your favorite story of the week was, or what your personal story of the week was, I'm going to say, what was your favorite thing they announced or reiterated in the very lengthy 40-minute long Nintendo Direct that happened this week?
It was a long one, wasn't it? But it was pretty good. I would say, actually, the N64 games and Sega Genesis games from the past coming to the Switch.
Yeah.
A positive of it is, one, I want to play older games. It's that simple. Like, speaking personally, I missed a lot of games when I was younger because I was either playing just Halo. That's it. That's all I played for years. Then StarCraft and then Heroes. And I just missed out on so much from the past. So I'm happy that they're doing that. I do have one reservation about it all, though, is they don't tell us how much it's going to cost. And I feel like what Nintendo is really good at is creating amazing IPs, but they know that. And they really do charge a lot of money to make sure that people are able to play their games. So I'm hoping that it'll be cost effective so we can enjoy and just not really be upset about what's coming to Nintendo Switch.
Yes. Well, of course, we do know how much Nintendo Switch Online costs. And one would have assumed prior to this announcement that perhaps adding the N64 games into Nintendo Switch Online would add value to that online streaming service that you pay, what, $8 a month for, I think is now the price. But no, that's not how it's going to work. It will require a Nintendo Switch Online account, but this is being called an expansion pack, which, again, Nintendo breaking new ground all the time, adding expansion kit packs to online streaming services or online subscription services. And this expansion pack, which will be launching in late October, so very soon, is going to include a whole bunch of N64 and Sega Genesis games, which is interesting. Not the same generation of consoles, but clearly, you know, a lot of people are excited about the Genesis games as well. There's a whole bunch of top tier stuff. I mean, Streets of Rage, Sonic the Hedgehog, Strider. I love Strider. Echo the Dolphin, Contra. Lots of great Genesis games alongside the heavy hitters from the N64. Ocarina of Time being the marquee one. Mario 64, you got to have that in there. Star Fox 64, Yoshi's Story, Mario Kart 64, Mario Tennis. Some cool stuff. But like you said, Trixler, there's no indication of how much the expansion pass is going to add to your monthly fee. Alongside those, however, I should bring up, we also got new controllers, wireless controllers that will work with your Switch, that are branded around the N64, look, you know, exactly like the old N64 controller, which I know a lot of people still think is one of the best controllers ever made. I don't know what do you think? Yeah, I know you said you missed those back in the day.
Yeah.
But do you have a fondness for that old hardware? Are you excited about them bringing that back?
I dabbled a bit because my cousins did play like the GoldenEye and all that stuff. I think the controller coming out is actually a big win for these type of games because these games are hard tuned to those controllers, right? Like if you play like an emulator nowadays and you try an Xbox controller, it feels a little off. It feels a little clunky. So I'm hoping that they can replicate that experience that we had back in those days. And I for sure will buy one as long as they're not like $80 to $100, you know, something like $20 to $30 makes sense to me. But I would love to play the Mario Kart on 64 on the old controller and how it felt and get that authentic experience because I think it'll deliver a lot. I don't know. What about you, Christian?
I mean, Nintendo and Sega have had a nice relationship now for the past probably decade going on. Like Mario and Sonic at the Olympics and
they both went to the Olympics together. I mean, you really form a bond when you are competing side by side and the grandest contest of the
but sharing of IP and Sega, you know, even back to the GameCube, right? Sega making F-Zero the best F-Zero is the GameCube F-Zero. And so we've seen them working together, but it still did as an old kind of blow my mind to see the head of Nintendo hawking a Genesis controller. Like, it's just like,
There is something cool about that. Yeah.
I mean, that was talk about a flex. Like you play these great games from this company.
I mean, it's a 30-year late 30-year late flex, but it is
you
a
might
flex.
Remember these old games. I don't, because we destroyed them. But if you were an idiot on the wrong side of history, like me, I love Genesis, you can play these. They all suck compared to our games that you can already anyway. No.
It's a flex for 40-year-olds is what
yes.
it is.
Thank you. And a 40-year-old flex is like a little hangier flex than it used to be.
Oh, no. Too real.
That blew my mind. It kind of bothers me. And the same thing happened with the Sega Genesis Mini, where like in Japan, they get the 6-button controller. And in the US, it's only the 3-button controller.
Yeah.
The 6-button controller is better. It's just a better controller. That blew me away. The N64 thing also blew me away. We had seen rumors of them or patents of them doing that controller, and a lot of people thought it was going to be another mini console to go this route.
I was going to bring that up. Do you think – would you have preferred it to be a mini console, or do you like that it's part of the Switch back compat?
I'd like a mini console because they sit on my shelf and they look good, and you kind of own them. I mean, I already own all these games, but mini consoles are very convenient ways – to revisit a lot of these games, I think.
And no subscription fee, right?
Right. Having them on Switch is also nice. My curiosity with this controller is, does it come with a center analog that also just turns to sand after 4 years or whatever? Like, the N64 controller was, you know, it brought analog to the masses, and the C camera ended up being changed over generations into another analog stick. But that center stick on N64 controllers does not stand the test of time. And I'm curious, is this that same, it's almost like a rack and pinion, like it's like a thing with the hoop through it, or is it a modern analog? But I agree with Trixler, so many N64 games play on that controller, you know, like it feels weird to do Mario 64 camera control with an analog because it was built around C buttons.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I think price is going to be the thing, right? Like Nintendo Switch Online is fairly reasonable as a game subscription service, as an online service.
Lackluster.
Yeah, but I hate too strong of a word. I dislike the idea of, like, you know, the precedent of Microsoft or whatever now going, and if you want to play Halo Infinite, sign up for Game Pass Rumble Pack, you know, or whatever. Yeah, and you're what? It feels weird.
Let me ask both of you, what is the right price point for an expansion pass? $2 extra a month? $5 extra a month? What are we thinking?
Yeah, like the idea of $2 to $3 sounds okay to me. Because again, like when you have to look at it, like, everything is becoming subscription-based. I have my TV subscriptions now. I have my movie subscriptions, and they all wind up stacking up, and I'm paying a lot of money over time to have all these stuff that I may not even utilize from month to month. So I think on the lower side, I'd be good. Under $5, I would be okay with. I would prefer for this practice to just roll into the online play, as we were mentioning earlier, but I understand they want to make money, etc. So anything under $5 is pretty good for me. I actually wanted to bring up Christian's point as well about it being a mini cartridge. I think I would have preferred that too, as well, because you own the games. They don't disappear a month later, which is such a rough thing to deal with, because sometimes you might be in the middle of a play session. You got to figure out how to finish it off real quick before it disappears from your Switch. Things like that can be a bit annoying. But if it's under $5, I would be okay with it. I would deal with it, and I would just go with the memory and just enjoy my time while it's out.
It's going to be really interesting to see how much they go, you know, how high they go with this expansion pass. Cause you know, to me, it feels like $2 to $3 is really the sweet spot or the upper bound as far as I'm concerned for what makes sense. Especially if I think it's $8 right now, right? Is that right, Christian? $8?
I don't know. I bulk bought and it was like, you know, ended up being, it was like $3 a month. You know, there was like when they launched, it was very, very cheap. I don't know how much it is now. My gut tells me $5 if you do the year plan, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's let me find it here. 12-month digital subscription right now is $20. So maybe if you buy it in month as 12 months, it's only $20. That's pretty low.
Yeah, it's not a lot. I think the key to this,
1 month is only $4. Okay, so I'm right. So 3 months is $8. So it's only $4 for a month right now.
Right,
$20 for 12 months. So I can't imagine they'd double that, would they? For just those that library?
But then it's like, not.
What, you know, there's rumors of GBA games or Game Boy games joining too. Does that then become another expansion pass, or is that a value add for this expand, you know, to this? And I think that's kind of the problematic part. I think if you can be smart and with your subscriptions, which the reason things have subscription is because most of us aren't, but whatever the price is, assuming it's not super unreasonable, it's a great value to be like, hey, I'm going to subscribe for a month and I have all these great games to play and it's only like, you know, $4. But what happens is you subscribe forever and then you realize I haven't played any of these. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because there are tons of new games coming out.
That's a fitness center model. You go for a month and then you forget. And the next thing you know, 2 years later, you've dropped $120 on something you're not using.
Totally.
Yeah, you dropped $120 and 0 pounds.
The $4, I guess I should have looked this up before we started talking, but the $4 a month changes my perspective, because I feel like now you're looking at like one or two that makes sense as an expansion pass, right? Because you can't make the expansion pass as much or more than the baseline. If you're using the semantics of an expansion pass,
sure,
right?
Yeah,
it feels like it needs to be a lower price than the, you know, the main product, right? It feels like it needs to be just a buck or two more. I don't know.
Maybe they'll announce a price increase of the main product in October also.
You know, wouldn't surprise me. We fixed internet. Here you go.
We fixed the internet.
It does. And bother again. I need to think of less strong words. The announcement without a price is annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so soon. I could understand if it's like, hey, we're creating a brand new Pokemon MMO. Here's the thing. We're going to do this. Never done before. It's going to be incredible. We'll have more details later. Great. You know, whatever. You're building this thing. It's going to, who knows what the monthly sub is. It's not coming out for a while. This is like, hey guys, we're going to flip the light switch next week. We'll tell you how much it is later. It just, let us, how much is it?
No, I totally agree, Christian. It feels like that bit of news they knew was not going to land well. And so they wanted to get that positive rub of everybody excited about this news without the negative rub of how much it's going to cost. And that just feels a little manipulative, you know?
I will say there is one really cool thing about this going on Switch Online is that it's going to have multiplayer. You can play Mario 64 with your friends, which to me is a big deal. I am at a point where I kind of miss playing old games like Halo Lands and whatnot. So just getting a scratch for that is pretty exciting as well. Not to like take away from the whole like price. There is like some cool positives with all this.
I think there is. I think it's a positive thing too. Again, it seems like the way Nintendo does stuff all the time with regard to services is always like one hand give, one hand take, or you know, just not completely how you'd want it. Not 100% something where you go, yes, you nailed it. But I do think it is cool that these games will probably find new audiences, and those of us who are nostalgic will get a chance to revisit them on a console that makes it easy and fun to play them on the go. And that's great too.
I do have a question for you guys, if we want to continue on this one a little bit.
Sure.
What games do you guys want? Because like Banjo-Kazooie has already been confirmed by Rare is coming after about a month or so. What is something that you guys actually want to play from your N64 or Sega era?
Christian, you want to answer that?
Yeah, N64, I think, and I think both of these were missing. I need to double check. But
Wave Race? Sorry.
1080. And then GoldenEye, obvi.
Yeah,
Perfect Dark, just to also have it. Microsoft might be stingier with that. Maybe not. I mean, it's already on Rare Replay, but to have it there again, to have with GoldenEye would be pretty great. I'm trying to think of something else out of the N64 library. Pilot Wings? Pilot Wings wasn't on this.
Do you guys remember a little game called Donkey Kong 64?
Donkey Kong 64.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
I think
I
they showed that as a future, like a, hey, we're thinking about, and it was kind of like, no promises, but here's other games you like.
I mean,
and then Genesis, it's the catalog's big, but I already have all that catalog, so I'm not. I mean, I have my Mega SG right next to me and all my Genesis games, but there's a lot they could add on Genesis, I think, to make people happy. And I think on both, on SNES and Genesis, if they are partnering with more people, I think there are a whole bunch of that era of sports games that us olds would really like to revisit.
The original Madden back in the day.
I mean, that's the game that got the most play on my Genesis of all is Madden on the Genesis. I played that so much. Oh my
NHL
God.
NHL 94. NBA Live 96, I think was my favorite. Like there's fun old, you know, they're very archaic compared to now.
Oh, yeah.
Fun little sports games. What about you?
Do you have... the Donkey Kong for me, but I just like looking at older games nowadays because I just like seeing the foundation of where we've built so far over the last 20 years when it comes to gaming. So like if I play like a Madden or whatever, I can see how simple it was, but like the idea was there. Or even things like Echo the Dolphin. Everyone talks about Echo the Dolphin, but I look at it and it looks boring. So I want to like actually play it and see what's up.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I say this so often as a confirmed old. Mm-hmm. I say this all the time is a lot of these games that people clamor for or have big, you know, real estate in our mind space, nostalgia and all this lore around that people think back on fondly. A great example, one I bring up all the time, is Shenmue, right? These games that people just have put on a pedestal. Well, 9 times out of 10, they were great because they were doing things in that time that were novel or breaking new ground.
Yeah.
But that ground having been broken at that time has been improved upon immensely, inevitably. And oftentimes those games, when you play them fresh and you don't have that nostalgia, you go, what's the big deal about this stuff? And it's like, well, you kind of had to be there because games weren't really doing that.
Yeah.
Because games were a much narrower space at that time. You didn't have indie games. You didn't have, you know, people making, thinking about games in quite the same way. And so oftentimes a game like Echo the Dolphin that tries to do something different, i.e. not having you shoot something every 4 seconds. People back then, it's like, wow, this thing is so crazy and so different. And then, of course, there are also games that are just
epic,
bonkers
Chrono
different.
Trigger.
I mean, there are games that are just would have been great in any era that they came out. Mm-hmm. And there are also games that are just bonkers different, like Seaman, for example, which is just like, what? How did this get made at all? But yes, I think that there are a lot of games that just don't stand up to the test of time and don't, it's hard to understand how they got the reputation that they got, but it's like, well, back then our expectations were so much lower.
Yeah. It happened to me with Halo 3 and the Master Chief Collection. When it came out, I was so pumped. Like I waited up till midnight. It came out and I was like, wow. Halo 3 just is not that fun. I think it was the community at the time is what made it so enjoyable. And it was like the only game and it was online play. And there was all these other factors that built into it. And then the game was there for everybody.
Right.
But nowadays you play it and you're literally sitting at a screen. You can literally just see the reticle just barely like sliding across. It feels so weird. And there's like no motion, which was so odd for me because I had so many fond memories of that game for years. It was my life.
So awesome. So it's so interesting to hear those things, you know, and all these vaunted games that we, I don't know if they're still at the top, but you know, it's like that with any piece of art. Technology moves forward, tastes move forward, culture moves forward, and all these things. It's like, oh, that was the greatest thing ever. Revisiting it, oftentimes you go, why did I think that? Christian, what was your favorite thing from the Nintendo presentation?
It's a toss up. But I know which one I'm going to give it to. They both had threes in their names, the two things that I was excited about. But one still feels very far away, and the other feels a little more real. I think the Splatoon 3 reveal, or further reveal, what they showed at the showcase was really fun and cool. They showed, you know, more of what you kind of know and love with the competitive Splatfest style, you know, paint the town, control the area. And then I'm still not entirely sure what the single player component is, where it's like the mammals are back. It was like moody and weird, and it was like cut to with like awesome music. Like I don't know what it's going to be, but I really like Splatoon 1 and Splatoon 2. Splatoon 2 still gets fairly regular play at my house with my kids. Like the core multiplayer game there is easy to pick up and play, and while there certainly is a skill level that makes you better at it. It's not like, oh, I guess I will go pick up CSGO again and see how I do. And you're like, oh no, this was a mistake. Like Splatoon, you can have fun. And it looks like they're carrying that forward with 3. And then if it does have a more compelling single player progression, I think that sounds awesome because 2's was fun. And I argue, as maybe someone whose hands are just, you know, atrophied, pretty difficult. Like the single player in Splatoon 2 was a lot of puzzles, not quite the right word, but like platforming and solving little areas with using your spray and launching and then landing and getting things done. And then some fairly difficult combat coming out of that as well that would like really hinder your momentum or what you were building toward. So I think there's a lot there, and I love that they're continuing to develop that franchise in a fun way. I think it looks awesome. It still feels far away because it's still just given a year. And anytime a game is just given a year, I assume that means kind of like Battlefield we talked about last week, Jeff. What's the latest possible date we can have it come out in this in this year? But it looks really good. I love the style of Splatoon. It embodies, you know, that Jet Set Radio, like, too cool for its own good, streetwear, hip music, pushing culture forward. I really, really like that franchise.
Are you into Splatoon at all, Trixler?
I played it a little bit. I thought it was smooth and enjoyable. I just, going back to our earlier point, just when it comes to Switch Online, I just can't stand it.
You're more of a Wii U guy.
100%. Also, I recently, with Pokemon Unite coming out, I finally picked up a Switch Pro Controller, and that has made my gaming so much better. So maybe if I go back to Splatoon and try it. But playing it on the joysticks and trying to be like pixel perfect just didn't really work for me at all in any way, shape, or form. So maybe I should revisit it sometime, especially with your glowing review.
We need to have a quick sidebar about Pokemon Unite, because you are, you know, top-tier MOBA player. What do you think it holds up as a competitive MOBA?
It is a large conversation. That's a podcast that we can spend a couple hours on, because when it comes to MOBAs, I have many thoughts, both positive and lots of negatives. I think
what Pokemon... Day 27 of Pokemon Unite Podcast. We're here with Jeff and Trickster as they're debating the viable lanes.
I think what they did with Pokemon Unite in the MOBA sphere is actually pretty intelligent by putting it on a 10-minute timer and putting you on a linear gameplay set. Yeah. The problem with that is when you have linear gameplay in a MOBA, you put a lot of power into the player's hands to work as a team, and people suck. People just don't know how to work together. And when you put it on a 10-minute timer, when you have people actually learn the game or try to figure out what the optimal way to play is, it just becomes more frustrating for people and it causes a lot of rift and a lot of problems. So when it comes to the actual game and how it runs from the start to the very end, I have a lot of qualms, but I have a lot of like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty interesting how they ran with that. But as a game by itself and how it's run with the last mobile update, I think it's fun. I think if you want to play a MOBA and you don't want to put any work to learning a game, you want to be casual, get into it. Go pick your favorite Pokemon, master them, hit your buttons, and enjoy yourself. It's great for that. If you want to be a competitive MOBA player, which is what most MOBAs do, is try to corner that competitive itch to try and win and beat out your opponent, it kind of falls flat for me.
Do you think it can be a gateway drug into that?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I think they made it really easy for people to orb walk, which is like the animation canceling to do auto attacks and whatnot, by slamming it onto a button, and you have a couple of hotkeys to get it a little bit more mastered into the game itself. So if you want to learn how to move your character in MOBAs, perfect. They've nailed that design. If you want to learn how to blow up stuff, they make everyone feel OP with a combo. Usually you can do 80% of their HP and then work your way into finishing them off with teamwork. They've nailed that aspect of it. So if you were to go from casual all the way up to like trying to be good, I would go Pokemon Unite, Heroes of the Storm, League of Legends, and then Dota. That would be your gaming life sphere.
Your progression to godhood.
Yeah, exactly. So it's awesome. Fun in that regard. And I think it's what I think Heroes of the Storm players play Heroes of the Storm as. I think Pokemon Unite nailed that design.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if you play Heroes of Storm, a lot of people kind of just run at each other and they go with that whole brawling segment they were going with the first year.
Yeah.
Pokemon Unite nails that brawling and they do a great job of it.
Very cool. I love getting your perspective on that. Very cool.
Anytime, man.
Yeah. So Christian, I assume the other game with the 3 in it was Bayonetta that you're excited about.
And first announced in 2017, 17?
The before times. The before times, yeah.
Before the before times, even. Like, a long time ago.
Yeah.
No gameplay, kind of just a logo. And we got our first look at gameplay. And I guess it was gameplay. It looked great, but it is another game that just feels, I don't know when. It looked like Bayonetta, I should say. It looks a little dated, only because the Switch hardware is long in the tooth, and Bayonetta has kind of been a game that it isn't living and dying on its art direction. You know, Bayonetta's, I think, a cool character, and the hair and the way she moves and animates and flips and stuff like that. But it is a franchise that I think would live better on a more powerful console, kind of like No More Heroes 3 or any of the No More Heroes. But now that we're on 3, it's like, oh, open world games can have longer draw distances than this. Like, why, why am I playing Turok on a motorcycle? So I love the combat. I'm likely there day one for Bayonetta 3, but it's hard for me to be super excited now when I was so excited in 2017.
And it's, yeah,
I'm still seeing clips of gameplay, not even a long play, you know, and like dropping this holiday or whatever. It still feels, it feels far away.
Yeah. Lots of stuff from this Nintendo Direct. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things to pick out, like Knights of the Old Republic is coming to Switch, but it's not that one that we all got excited about. It's actually the old one, and it feels a little bit like that thing where grandma bought the wrong game again. You know, we talk about that a lot, where it's like, oh, I'm excited about that Knights of the Old Republic. Oh, it's out on Switch? Well, this doesn't look any different than the old one. I feel
like that's a Nintendo strategy, because when Final Fantasy VII Remastered was announced, they immediately brought back the other Final Fantasy VII, which I think is actually a pretty cool strategy. It's just like, it does feel like, yeah, but we have this cool shiny thing coming soon. I want cool shiny.
I guess it's a cool strategy, but it also feels a little predatory in the sense of just people not knowing any better. Anyway.
What feels even weirder was Sony announcing Mario.
Mario
65.
It's one more than they've got. I'll tell you the thing that surprised me the most. ActRaiser Renaissance. I will tell you, I vividly remember the Christmas Eve where my aunt and uncle, who never, actually technically great aunt and uncle, it's my my grandmother's sister and her husband, who never got me, they got me the kinds of gifts where it was like an encyclopedia subscription, you know, or like a place to keep my pencils. Yeah, those are the kind of gifts they got. And then one Christmas, they must have asked my mom what I wanted, or I don't know how they got, but they got me ActRaiser for Super Nintendo.
And it that's when they became your great aunt.
They were my,
before they were just regular.
They were just good aunts. And they became a great aunt.
Wait, sell me on this game. I'm looking at the trailer. Is this a JRPG? Is it a platformer with like combat? What is this?
All of the above. It was such a weird genre-bending monstrosity back in the, whatever, late 80s, early 90s, whenever it came out. And this is out now. ActRaiser Renaissance is out now. I have not played it, but it's getting good reviews.
I'm looking at it. It looks great.
I kind of don't even want to revisit it. Based exactly on the conversation we had earlier, which is like my opinion of ActRaiser is so wrapped up in who I was as a little kid when I played it. But I don't think it'll live up. But people are giving it very high marks. So maybe I will take a look at it. Anyway, it's such an odd game. Or at least was at that time. It had all kinds of weird, like, city management stuff. And it was a platformer, but it's also kind of got RPG elements. It was just such a... It wasn't like anything I'd ever played before when I played it at that time. And I don't know.
It was also a showcase for Mode 7, if I remember correctly.
Well, like, everything was at that time. I mean, it was like Mode 7 out your ears all the time. Anyway, I just think it's such an... It is one of those IPs that I've always sort of had in the back of my head. And thought, wonder why nobody's doing anything with ActRaiser, which I also think is one of the great titles of anything. ActRaiser, that's a cool word. You know, it's just a great title. It's so evocative and in some non-specific way. Anyway, that shocked me. But of course, I think if I had to pick out the thing that I'm most excited about playing from the Nintendo Direct, it's actually Triangle Strategy. That game looks really cool and really interesting, and they showed a lot more of it. I like the way they presented it as, hey, we gave you that demo, you know, back in February, and we've really taken your notes to heart, and we've changed a lot of stuff. And just like, I think that game looks really cool, and I'm excited. I love turn-based stuff, and I love that, what do they call it? 2D HD, they're calling
it. Yeah,
I love that look. Yeah, exactly. Octopath Traveler for sure. Anyway, so overall, I thought it wasn't a huge, huge direct for things for me personally that I'm super excited about. I was really interested in seeing a new Kirby game. That's not the Kirby game I'm looking forward to. You know, it looks like the Sonic Adventure of Kirby games. Which is not a compliment.
But you can wear a Link's hat. They like show that four times during this trailer. Really? Like, look, he has a sword.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the big ending thing was Disney Magical World 2 Enchanted Edition, which is like, they're just kind of carting out all these old updates and remakes, he said, after just going crazy about ActRaiser. So I guess I'm a hypocrite. But overall, not a ton of stuff for me personally to be super excited about.
Are you guys into Metroid or anything? Because like, I mean, Metroid Christian's... Dread keeps even showing off, but like, one, Christian... I've never like played a Metroid, so.
Oh, you've never played a Metroid?
Never played a Metroid. I played Metroidvanias, like Ori, Hollow Knight, all of those, and I love them. I think they're incredibly fun. And then I look at this Metroid Dread, and I'm like, this is on Switch hardware. This doesn't look that good. But some people seem pretty excited about it.
Well, I know Christian is very excited. I will just say, before you get on your excitement train, which I'm very excited for you to load up.
I'm already on it!
I'm very excited for Leave the Station. I will say, and a lot of people have been very much anticipating this game for decades, but the idea of me playing a Metroid and having something chasing me and kind of giving me a time limit all the time is not appealing. But, and that's a lot of what they showed in the Direct, was like, there's something that is always chasing you and you can't kill it all the time.
Someone played Resident Evil 2 and was like, this will be great in Metroid.
It just doesn't appeal to me. But Christian, tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I think they got to balance that. If it's always present, I don't think it will be a hit. I mean, Metroid is about exploring and backtracking and figuring things out. But an occasional threat that pushes you forward into uncomfortable situations, I think, is a fun twist on a Metroid franchise where it does pick up the pace a little bit and cause you to, you know, maybe blow past a secret that then you'll need to go back and revisit. I think there's cool stuff they could do. It's just speculation at this point, but it's like next 2 weeks. It's out very, very soon.
Yeah.
I'm super excited for it. Trickster, have you, another thing they announced we haven't talked about that might also be a gap in your gaming library, which I highly recommend going back and playing if you haven't. Have you played any of the GBA Castlevania games?
No. The only Castlevania that I played was from the Castlevania producer. What was the name of that? Bloodstains. I played that, and I was like, wow, this is very enjoyable. I love the art. I love the presentation. I love the combat. I didn't go all the way through because it seemed like a lot of grinding, but that game was great.
Yeah, if you like the Metroidvania, I mean, Symphony of the Night, right, is kind of the first Castlevania game to become a Metroidvania of that ilk. But these GBA games, especially Aria of Sorrow, which I believe is the third one of them, but all three of the games in that Advance collection are phenomenal. Metroidvania, you know, Castlevania games in that ilk that are incredible combat exploration, that loop of finding new things and power-ups and getting back, really wonderful music. Highly, highly recommend that package. The only reason I didn't buy it is I've played them all a lot, and then also knowing that that package is a lifetime of game. Like, there's so many hours of games in there that, like, I know I wouldn't sit down and put the time in, but if people have missed those GBA games for whatever reason,
now's the time to get them, huh?
Highly recommend it. Yeah,
it's funny. I feel the same way. It's like when they, you know, released the Mass Effect collection. It's like you just got 300 hours of game.
Yeah, it's right, like there. Gosh, I wish I didn't play that game so I could play it.
I mean, it's awesome, but to me, it's just like I can't even. That's like somebody saying you should watch all the seasons of, you know, a 12 season long show. It's like, I if I had like organically gotten to that, I would have probably loved it. But all of it landing in one heap on my desk just feels too much.
I had a friend that took the task of doing a YouTube series for the Mass Effect trilogy when it came out, and it took him 121 episodes to get through everything, and he just grinded for like 2 months straight.
That's content, baby.
I could not
believe
it. Yeah.
Content! That's
it looks good, though.
I mean, they're great, but I kind of relating to what you're saying, Christian, of like, it's all these Castlevanias, and it's just a lot of game there in each of them, so... Yeah.
I think the same is true of Mass Effect and for Castlevania as well. In my opinion, that's not the kind of you can between each one, you can put it down and pick it up again. But like those games aren't the games that you put down in the middle of and then come back 3 weeks later and go like, where was I?
Yeah. You forget mechanics. You're suddenly getting beat up. You get frustrated. You stop playing.
Don't know what you're backtracking to your map or whatever. It's kind of like Mario Sunshine. Or Mario Galaxy, like that kind of game. It's like, yeah, put it down. You're revisiting it. Play some of your favorite levels. Put it down. Come back to it 2 months from now. Revisit your favorite levels. Have fun. It's like you're picking it up and you can kind of just play it again. But like, at no point would I recommend, okay, play 10 hours of Hollow Knight. Then stop for 4 months.
Yeah, right.
You'd be so
then
screwed.
Then come back. That's the experience. And Mass Effect's the same way where it's like, who was I romancing? What was I doing? What planets do I need to go to? They're commitments, but I love that they exist. It's just I'm not at a place to play them right now. But I hope that people that either didn't have GBAs or people now that have grown up on Metroidvanias, I love that there's a convenient way for them to go back and experience some of the best vanias of that namesake.
Two other quick things I want to mention from this Nintendo Direct before we move on. The first is Dying Light 2 Stay Human is going to be on Switch via a streaming service, a cloud streaming service,
They did for Resident Evil. They did for Control. Yeah. They've done it.
To
Guardians
kind
of the Galaxy
more effect.
Be that.
Did it work?
Both cases, people didn't think that. I mean, I only heard secondhand. I didn't try them. But I heard not great.
Oh, I played through, I mean, because I'm, you know, I basically have Control tattooed in Old English on my back. I love it so much. I played
Old English was a weird choice, though.
It's just not for a back tattoo.
Well, for Control, it just feels like it's just asynchronous, you know, just
the artist didn't have good control of the tattoo pen, so which is why it ended up that way. tried to cover it up.
It's like a mashup of two styles. I'm just saying.
Look, Corey was busy. Corey doesn't do tattoos, so I couldn't get him to do the official logo on the back. I played through a good chunk of that again on Switch, and there was a time when I have good internet, where I had good internet, it was better that way than on a base PS4.
All right. Well, there you go. Maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like Dying Light 2, Stay Human, if you're excited about that game...
Right. I don't probably want to play it on Switch through a cloud service. I want it on the best graphics possible. I want to have the instant responses. I'm parkouring on zombies. Like, I want to be invested and not have any issues whatsoever. It's not a pickup for me.
Agreed. Okay, and then the last thing we have to talk about, because we can't not talk about it, because everybody's talking about it, is that Chris Pratt's playing Mario, everybody. They announced the Mario animated movie, which, by the way, could not have been a better thing for my son to hear. I watched the Nintendo Direct and I told my son, who is obsessed with Mario, just had a Mario birthday party.
And Chris Pratt. He just had a Chris Pratt.
Well, he does like the Lego movie. He walks around saying, has anybody seen my pants? I told him, Jack, they're making a Super Mario movie. And he went, Daddy, can we go see it tomorrow? And I went, 2022.
They only announced the cast list. That's it.
My kid's like, why are you telling me this right now then? You're just making my day worse. Anyway, so tell me what you think, Trixler. The internet is
upset. I don't want to go first because I'm not upset with Chris Pratt being Mario. Like,
that's fine. That's a
everyone is
opinion.
Like utterly upset about this. And I don't know if it's because like if you go outside of his acting career, there are some like political stuff that does pop up. And I don't want to dive into that here on this podcast, but I think as a actor, he brings something to the screen that people enjoy. He's done it for years, Parks and Rec, multiple movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, even animated voice work in the past that we know that he's killed it with, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like the voice doesn't match Mario, which is fine, but like at the same time, you're just trying to sell this movie to people and sometimes big stars get you in there. I mean, I'm excited for Jack Black as Bowser. I will literally go watch the movie for Jack Black. And I'm sure there are people that will do that for Chris Pratt as well. So I'm cool with it. We'll see if they deliver it, and I'll go test it out day one. Like, I want to see a Nintendo movie that's actually done well. That's not the Super Mario we have from the 80s that we so lovingly think about all the time.
Yeah. I mean, clearly they're going A-list all the way. You know, it's you just go right down the list. It's all
Seth
these incredible
Rogen
people.
Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong. How funny is that? I mean, can hear the laugh Charlie coming Day. Out.
Yeah, it's a top-tier thing. They're clearly trying to make a big mass-market movie along the lines of a Lego movie. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to attract people that wouldn't already be going to see a Mario movie.
Exactly.
People that would much rather see or much more likely to see a Pixar or a DreamWorks animated movie. And this, you know, this is in that same ilk. But Christian, let me hear your take on Pratt.
Well, I do want to say that Seth Rogen originally was going to be playing Stony Kong. He's just a very stoned Donkey Kong.
I think that's Diddy. Isn't that Diddy?
Or Cranky.
I would not be surprised.
Who is someone else is playing Fred Armisen, I think, is playing Cranky Kong, right? Anyway,
yep.
It's a good cast. I think Chris Pratt just isn't an obvious choice. Like, Lego Movie, it is kind of an everyman still, and you're like, that makes sense. And I think no one just thought, like, that makes sense. There are some actors where you could say that person's name, and I think people would be like, oh, I wouldn't have thought, yeah, that could work. And Chris Pratt just isn't that person, I think, for anybody, for Mario. There's not a world in which people hear his dialogue in past movies and think, this seems like Mario. And I think part of it is because in the games, Mario's also not throwing quips. You know, Mario's not Nathan Drake. Mario's not super verbal in games. And there's not this world, VO heavy version of Mario. And then I think Chris Pratt is suffering a little bit from overexposure. He's in kind of everything. They're making him or trying to, I don't know, not they, but like Tom Cruise, you know, like you can do everything. You can be in everything. And as you mentioned, Trixler, he's had a lot of success across genre and types, but he is everywhere. And then I think the stuff that, you know, the gossip page six rumors of he and his ex-wife and the church that he goes to and his wishy-washy comments on social issues that other people in casts that he's in are very vocal in support of. And he's like, hey, you know, it doesn't say one way or the other. He kind of tries to float that middle line, I think, makes people angry. And then it also becomes further exposure where it's like, it almost becomes talked about more because he tries to make it a non-issue, it seems like, instead of just having a say. And then the thing, Jeff, that really makes me mad, and I haven't talked about this on this show, but the thing that really makes me mad is I got put on a veil for Mario. It's the Splash Man doing Mario!
Wow.
It's a Mario, baby!
What?
Let's go!
Let's be honest.
It's a Doobs!
Let's be honest. Oh. That's way more of a Waluigi voice.
No, that's what I thought. I went in for Waluigi. And then they said, could you please, in the line where I got put on a veil for it, the line was, really, the princess is in another castle? Are you kidding me? And then it was like, and then I held the castle for like 20 minutes, and it was a standing applause.
Wow. Impressive.
I'm getting noise gated, chat is telling
me. Sequel for sure. Just,
yeah, no, makes that's sense. Good, because even your own equipment is rejecting this notion.
As long as it's not noise gating in your ears, Jeff, then it's worth it.
My only question with all of this is he going to be doing a voice?
Yeah.
Is it just going to be Chris Pratt talking like Chris Pratt? Or is he going to be talking like me? Ah, it's me. You know, I that's my question.
I think it's going to be the former. Any movie, has he done anything different besides maybe like give you a different look with his eyes? I think it's just
he
Chris
says
Pratt.
He's working on a voice because he did an Instagram where he did a bad voice. He goes, it's a me. I'm a Mario. And everybody's
why
like,
would
oh.
he do that?
And then he goes, that's not the real voice, but I've been working hard and your guys are going to love it. And it was also like, ugh. I mean, he's clearly super talented. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm excited. I think the movie's going to be fun. I'm ready for Mario to take that place as a big movie. I mean, he's Mickey Mouse already, right? Might as well be in movies too. That's, yeah. All right. One more quick thing that I want to mention before we get to the games we've been playing, which I know is going to be a fun segment. But last week we talked about this rumor of Quantic Dream, the makers of Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls and Detroit Become Human, getting the license to do a Star Wars game. And there's a new report this week from Kotaku that was a follow-up about this. And I just thought we owed it to the audience to bring it up because we speculated a whole bunch about what it might be like for a Star Wars game made by Quantic Dream and that Quantic Dream style of the branching narrative storylines and QTEs and all that stuff. And I think we came away pretty interested in what they might come up with. Well, the update, again, still a rumor, no official confirmation about this project, but the update is Quantic Dream may be making this, but it ain't going to be like any other Quantic Dream game before. All of the stuff that I got excited about is like, wow, what about a Star Wars game with no combat? And like, that just seems so interesting. Now, it's going to be a traditional. They've been hiring all kinds of new people from Ubisoft and Eidos and WB Montreal to try to bolster their roster of people that can make action games, action adventure games. It's just going to be another Star Wars game. And maybe it'll be great. But I do think it's interesting that all of our speculation last week, no. None of that.
Well, they also say in this updated rumor report that because of that, though, they're running into some issues of like their engine isn't built for that. And yeah. What tweaks do they have to make? It does. Again, we're talking about rumors that are talking about other rumors. It does seem interesting to like, we're going to hire this studio or to do the thing they're known for doing. No.
Well,
OK, that's I mean, it's yeah.
Well, I think it kind of points more to what I brought up last week. And I was like, well, I guess I'm totally wrong about this last week, which was Quantic Dream's games, not super mainstream.
Yeah, they're very niche. It
seems like they've decided to become a more mainstream studio.
Yeah, a lot of these games that they make, people watch more than they buy and play, and they probably are wanting to turn around some more profit margin. I am one of those niche fans that loves the way that they present games. I think Detroit Become Human was a masterpiece in the way that it was presented, and it's kind of cool to go back in their old games like Fahrenheit or Beyond Two Souls and see that foundation being laid out and them getting better at it and finally nailing it in Detroit Become Human. But I think completely agree. They probably just wanted to try and expand a little bit more, show people what they are capable of, and try to take with their narrative experience and just add some gameplay to it, because people want gameplay, as you've seen from Assassin's Creed, from Valhalla, and some of these games that W Games Montreal's worked on. Like, they're working on Gotham Knights. Those are games that you run around, collect a thon, and beat people up, and they probably just want to try and jump into that a little bit.
Yeah. And again, we're multiple years away, likely, sure, for this, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Maybe Quantic Dream becomes a very different kind of studio moving forward. All right, let's talk about the games that we have been playing in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. All right, I was particularly excited to have you on this week, Trixler, because you've been playing a bunch of games, streaming a bunch of games, finishing a bunch of games, yes, that I've been talking about. You texted me a couple of times, and really, you're the reason that I played a couple of the games on your list.
Oh, heck yeah. So,
yeah, I'm excited to chat with you about a whole lot of stuff. Let's start with a game that has been breaking the series sales records, the Tales of series, Tales of Arise. It's this kind of, I think, unexpected hit. You've been playing Tales of Arise. What do you think of it?
It's incredible. I mean, personally, just coming out of the gates, I'm 26 hours deep into it, and I just got through what would consider be the tutorial, or usually in JRPGs, wow, or some kind of like big hit ahead, where it's like, okay, now let's change the game completely and go down a different story path. And that, I just hit that part, just to like, yeah, try and avoid spoilers. I think it is.
You just to have it. To get through the first 26 hours.
Oh, no. What's so great about this game is every single time you play a JRPG, you start in the first 3 hours and you're walking around, you're seeing the village people, everything's happy, there's happy music playing, you're baking a pie, like in Tales of Vesperia, things are going great, and then suddenly something evil happens 3 hours in, and that's when the game starts. Yeah. And that sucks for a lot of people. A lot of people don't want to dig with that. They don't get it, especially if it's your first JRPG, you're like, why am I here? I mean, if any of you play Kingdom Hearts first as your first JRPG, everyone hates the first 2 hours because you build a boat and you hang out with people and your children, yeah, and finally gets in the game. This game gets rid of that for the first 3 hours. You start, You are in the world, and immediately within the first 20 minutes, you get your first taste of combat, and you just go. Your goal is to do something, which is to fight five lords, right? So I think they finally nailed that. But what I love about the Tales series is they take Eastern animation, and they try their best to replicate it into a game. And they've been close. I've played Tales of Berseria. I've watched some gameplay of other games as well. Tales of Rise, I think, is the first time they have been 98% of the way there. And it is a joy if you love anime and love that type of animation style. Legend of Korra, all that kind of stuff. It plays like that and it feels like that. They took their combat from Tales of Berseria, which was more combo-based. You kind of slam down your buttons, but you would preset combos and just kind of unload on people. They've taken that and made it a little bit more slow and more combat-based with like a Marvel versus Capcom type of like interaction. And it feels so fun to play. I think it looks great. And they've also made it to where in Tales series, I feel like boss fights are kind of like meat grinders. You kind of just like beat them up a little bit and then you get a cutscene and go from there. They're more interactive. You're actually able to interact with your boss fights. They become epic raids. You fight freaking huge dragons. And it's just pure fun. Like, I can't sell this game enough. Just to like encapsulate it for anyone that might play JRPGs or like slightly interested. I think this is top three JRPGs for me. Between Final Fantasy VII Remaster, Chrono Trigger, and now Tales of Arise. I need to finish it, of course, and get that finale. But right now, it's shaping up to be one of my favorite experiences. Like, it's incredible how it just unfolds for you.
Wow, that I have not heard anybody talk about it in that high regard. It is that's awesome. Tales of Arise. You're obviously enjoying the story as well.
Yeah, the story, when you play JRPGs, typically you build out a party, and there's a couple people that fall through the cracks. You're just like, eh, you're kind of annoying, or you don't do anything fun, or I don't like how you interact. Every character brings something to the table, and the best part about it is they make people sit on the bench, but you're able to activate them in the middle of a fight so they can excel at what they do to help you win the fight and extend a combo. And that's where that Marvel versus Capcom kind of comes in a little bit.
Right.
And every character, while they might have some like glaring negatives, they have glaring positives, and they always come together to figure out a solution together. There isn't this weird rift that comes together at 60 to 70 hours later in the game. From the start, they are a party that are working together towards an overarching goal, and they're willing to hear each other out. There's some T-Sunder moments overall, but I think they just nailed character development finally as well. I literally cannot give this game a better glowing reveal. I think it's something that everyone should play if they need to figure out what a JRPG is like, because it jumps into the action right away and it gives you a chance to finally discover what so many people like and enjoy in these games.
Amazing. Tales of Arise, Trixler seal of approval.
Are you guys gonna try it? Please tell me you'll play at least 3 or 4 hours.
No, I really, it was completely off my radar. I mean, as far as something that,
hold on, I can't.
I mean, there's definitely too many games, trying to find the clip to play, right?
Perfect.
But now I feel like I have to play Tales of Arise.
I think everyone should at least attempt to play it for a little bit just to see how they present cutscenes and story moments. It's really interesting how, one, they switch over their engine to the Unreal Engine, so it's beautiful. The game just looks great compared to past entries in the entire series. But whenever they get to a moment that's supposed to drive an emotion or really hype you up, they switch to 2D animation, and it just looks beautiful. It's smooth. I'm going to keep gushing. We can move on.
No, it's great. I mean, there's a couple other games on your playlist that I literally started playing because you were very positive on them as well. One of them is a game I've been playing a lot of this week, Kena Bridge of Spirits. Excuse
me. Just sing its praises. Please let us know.
I like it. I have not finished it. You have finished it. So I'll let you take the lead on this. You really dug this game.
Yeah, I started out, this actually opens up another conversation in general that I wanted to ask you guys about. But first, like, this is a game that looks like Pixar quality animation through and through. Like, to the point that it looks so good that when you're doing puzzles, you can't see things popping out. Like, sometimes in games, things like a little bit more high texture or look better. You're like, oh, that's how I saw the puzzle.
Yeah.
The game just breathes life into everything. Like, the plants, the way you use abilities in a fight, and also smooth and there's even like weird elements of it. I hate saying this because I feel like every game journalist says this. It's got some Dark Souls combat in it a little bit. Yeah. Some dodge rolls, some iframes, some big boss fights that really take the moment where you are in the game and kind of show off the mechanics and allow you for you to progress forward and get better at the game. And I think if this studio doesn't work out in gaming, which I think they should, first off, with this being their first indie game ever, they should just go into just doing movies, because I would watch their products without a doubt.
Yeah, you're right. It is gorgeous. It feels to me like a DreamWorks animated feature at every level. It is beautiful. And I will echo and underscore what you said about the wonderful little bits of detail. The story is you play as this spirit guide.
Bugger, yeah.
Yeah. And she finds these things called rot, which are cute little spirit creatures, little dark elf-like things that appear. And you kind of collect them almost like Pikmin. You collect them and they can do stuff for you in the environment. They can pick up big things and move them around.
And
they
you can put hats on them. That's the most important part. You collect hats and all the hats are adorable, and you can switch it up and make them all adorable, and then you can take pictures of them. Okay, continue, Jeff.
I love that you are so excited about that. I was going to say, I think the game vastly overestimates how much I want to put hats on my rocks, but I'm glad you do. I'm glad you do.
Give me the bunny ears all day.
There are lots of hats, and you can spend hours just like putting hats on your rocks and taking pictures with them, which evidently you have done. Anyway, but I love how they are sort of around you all the time, and you'll walk into a new area, and they'll just like pop up on a stump over in the corner, and they're like watching you and hanging out. And I've never seen a game do it quite like that before, where you are collecting these things and they aren't just sort of procedurally following you. They are interacting with the environment with their own personality. They have their own little life to them that is helpful to you, because sometimes they'll point out interesting stuff in the environment. But most of the time, it just feels like they're alive in a way that is complementary to the things you're doing, not completely tied to the things you are doing.
And you're on a journey with them, and you're bonding every second of the way.
It's really cool. It's really cool. And I will say, and you were talking about the Souls-like combat, which it does have Souls-like combat. My only criticism with Kena Bridge of Spirits is... I'm not really sure who this game is for. Like, it's aesthetic and tone and world feels so welcoming and sweet, and like a movie for, you know, a 10-year-old. And I'm not saying that as a detriment. I think I love that. I love the feel of that. But then there are these crazy difficulty spikes that happen where it's like, you better be good. And I know that there is a lower difficulty setting of...
Who wants to do that? Who wants to admit they can't beat a kids-looking game, right? Like
Christian's raising his hand.
Christian's like, I got this. Yeah, me.
Yeah, there is story mode. There's like the story setting where I haven't tried it, but I'm assuming the combat is a lot easier. But I'm on like the normal, whatever normal is. Hmm. And there's some serious difficulty spikes. Like there are a couple of moments where I had to set it aside and come back the next day. Which, by the way, always works. Why does that always work?
Your brain resets. You're not tilting anymore.
Yes, you're not tilting anymore. Exactly. And it's such a strange thing that I'm so resistant to that strategy of just stop beating your head against the wall, go away, do something else, and come back to it. Anyway, and then, like, invariably, the first time I try it, after 8 times of dying in a row, it's like, I just beat it in the first try.
It's the human version of unplugging it and plugging it back in.
It really is.
You power cycle your brain.
Someone tells you to do that, and you're like, that's not gonna, that is so dumb. Okay, it worked. Yep. It worked.
I have a theory to your point, actually, about who this game is for.
Yes.
I feel like that game may have been started with the foundation of, this is like a Shadow of the Colossus. We want you to explore, enjoy your time in the world, synergize with it, and then suddenly when you get to the important objective points, here's a big boss fight for you to move forward, or just like ways to move in. And I think that game would have succeeded like that, but I feel like someone came in and was like, we don't have enough gameplay, there's not enough hours, because the entire game, when you play it all the way through, is like 8 to 9 hours. So perhaps they wanted to add a little bit more longevity to it, or maybe they were looking for combat.
8 to 9 hours of hats. Right.
It's about two hours of hats, about 6 hours of story, about 3 hours of tilting on boss fights. I think they were just like, oh crud, we have to put mobs in the game and we have to make you interact. And this is where I actually was bringing up at the very, very start. What do you guys think about games where they drop you into a world and the combat feels so clunky until you find an upgrade? Do you see that as a success, or do you see that as like, They're hampering you so they can give you the good stuff later on so you feel powerful.
I think that is a great question, and it is absolutely something I was going to bring up with this game as well, because I saw your tweet about it. You're like, the game starts slow. I totally agree it starts slow. And you literally see the moment where you get something and you go, oh, this was the game the whole time.
Yeah.
You weren't letting me play the game the first 2 hours I was playing it.
Mm-hmm. Because Jedi Fallen Order did that, and there's a lot of games that do that. And I don't know if it's like this weird placebo effect where it's like, it's not placebo because it's actually active, but they want you to feel that power spike so you feel like you're getting better at the game. And I don't know if I like it or not. I'm struggling with it lately in games.
Christian, you want to answer that? I think this is a great question.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I haven't played this game, so I can't speak to it specifically. I understand the approach, and mm-hmm. I think when done well, it's incredible, right? When done well, and you're having fun still at the beginning, but then you get this new thing, and then in retrospect, you're like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like Ori does a great job of that. The second one, I get the names wrong because it's not just sequels. Like you start out and it's fun. It's fun. And then you unlock some of the powers and a lot of Metroidvanias do this, I think, really well. And then you unlock some powers and you're like, now I know how I'm supposed to get across the world. This is incredible. Guacamelee, mm-hmm. a lot of 2D games, I think, do this really, really well. A 3D game that I think also does it well is Deathloop. Deathloop, I think, does it really well. You start off with no powers and you're kind of figuring out these levels in these worlds, and then you start to get your powers and level up your powers. And then it's like, now I see where that window's there. It's not, I am a murderer incarnate, you know, and you're just flying through. But I think if it isn't fun initially, then I think that's just the miss. I do like the idea of becoming God tier later. I think that's super fun. I think you just need to balance how it starts, how it feels initially, and then hopefully it feels better later, if that makes sense.
I think the problem with Kena in this regard, and I think there are a number of games that do it, is that you play through a fairly significant section of the game just without a major pillar of your abilities, mm-hmm. like a major section of what you do. In the game, it's like, oh, I also can do all this other stuff. And that it's different when it's like something has been kicking my butt and then I get a new power that trumps that makes me feel like, oh, that thing that was kicking my butt no longer can kick my butt. That feels awesome.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, now I can rip the shields off of them and whatever. I'm pulling that out of my.
It's something, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, now the thing that's been frustrating me, I have a tool that specifically operates to disarm that. Yes. That's not exactly what I think we're talking about. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Trixler. But
I feel like I'm missing a button for the first couple of hours.
Yes.
I'm missing something on my controller, and I feel like my entire controller is not utilized.
And it's true, because then you get another button, and you're like, that's what this. Now the game has started. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, unfortunate.
I guess what we're trying to say is, if you're going to play Kena, and I think you should, if you have the access to a PS5, it is on PS4 and Epic as well. I think I played it on the PS5. It was beautiful. The load times were wonderful.
Yeah.
If I would probably play it on PC and then maybe PS4 last nowadays. But if you do play it, just harbor the warning. For the first couple hours, there are going to be moments where you're going to be confused. You're going to feel like you are missing something. But if you keep pushing through it, by the second major boss fight, the game just blossoms and it's beautiful. I just recommend it more. I mean, Tales of Arise and Kena right now are probably the best games I've played in the last month. Like they were smooth.
It does become a much more funny. The first part of the game isn't bad.
Yeah.
It's just bland. It just feels like, oh, is this all there is to this game? And then
it's almost jarring.
Yeah, and then it goes, no, that's not all there is to this game. There's all this other stuff. And you go, oh, well, okay, well, that's fun. It just becomes so much more dynamic and interesting, and you have so many more options with how you deal with the bad guys, and the puzzles become more interesting. Everything becomes more interesting because you literally have a new way of interacting with the world. So anyway, I don't think I love it as much as you. I do think it is gorgeous. I really like the puzzles. The game has a lot of... has that confidence to let you sit in the not knowing, which too few games do. I think there's a lot of games where they're like, oh my gosh, it's been 5 seconds since the player got, you know, encountered this puzzle. Let's give them some massive hint or just tell them how to do it because I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable. And this game, there were several puzzles where I was like, I genuinely don't know how to do this right now. And I just kind of sat there and thought through it and kept experimenting and then found it and was like, oh, that was satisfying. And I like that about it. I think it's a gem. I do. I like it's Kena, Bridge of Spirits. I intend to finish it. I'm having a good time playing it.
It is their first indie game. So for me, it was good enough, maybe to not oversell it. It's good enough to where I'm interested in their next project. And I think that's always a good statement about game studios, especially on their first product.
And I bought it. It was $40. I mean, it's not a full price game. It does feel like a AAA game to me. It's beautiful. It's great. All right. The other game that you persuaded me to play, and this one was a little controversial last week because I said some things that folks in our Reddit and Discord disagreed with vehemently. Is Pathfinder.
Oh, yep. Yeah, there's a lot of opinions on that game.
Wrath of the Righteous. You texted me and you're like, are you playing this? It's got Divinity vibes. And I was like, well, you said the magic words. I'm going to buy this game. So tell me, I know you put crazy hours into Pathfinder, right?
I think I put about 20 hours into it. I will say that before going into this, I was not a Pathfinder knowledgeable guy whatsoever. I find it to be obnoxious with some of its mechanics, but I do think the story is very good. That's why I wanted to reach out to you, because I know you do a wonderful job with D&D and storytelling, and you kind of appreciate that stuff a lot. And I think when it comes to that factor of this entire thing, they nail it in the whole Divinity 2 regard. They have a wonderful story where you are the center of the attention. You are thrown into a world and things just go to heck right away, and you have to figure out how to make a party and move forward. But I also have ran into many opinions about how wrong I am when it comes to D&D and these mechanics, because this is basically D&D hardcore. Like, every time that you are doing combat in this game, you're rolling 4 dice in the background. You could miss out on attacks. Things could not roll out well. If you're not building into certain things that are hidden in the background, and until someone points them out for you, you will continue to fail constantly. And I found a lot of frustration with the game in that regard. And one thing they also did is, I think in the first game, don't quote me on this, but in their first game, they had turn-based combat, and people modded it to be action combat, where people would just kind of run in and fight. And so they adopted that and made it one of their main play styles in this game, with the ability to go into turn-based mode, which is, I think, the superior way to play D&D. Mm-hmm. And it felt really, really jarring, but I kept like pushing my head into it and keep trying to like grind against this wall to make it work. I just think it was a poor play on their part. So if you do play this game, please go into turn-based mode. You will save yourself so much headaches, and you will be able to play the game a lot better. But for D&D, if you are looking for that Divinity 2 itch and you want to go hardcore and you want to go down this rabbit hole of mechanics on top of mechanics on top of mechanics that actually feed into another mechanic, this is a game for you. You will spend 200 to 300 hours playing this game easily. It is a game that you buy and you play all year. And it's a game that you can kind of drop and pick up in a couple of weeks if you want to, if you kind of know where you're going on the map.
I agree with almost everything you said. You could spend 200 hours in the character creation.
Yeah, the character creation is phenomenal. That's what put me into it. It's phenomenal, man. You can play anything you want.
Yeah, you could create a character that has a pet, mm-hmm. and then the pet is a full character creator. Like, it's wild. Anyway, some folks in the subreddit at 5x5dlc.reddit.com were taking me to task because of the things that I said about it last week. And a lot of that was my criticism of the combat. And there are folks in here saying I played 70 hours and thought it was weird listening to Jeff's criticism. Somebody else said that Jeff didn't look into the difficulty settings. Or what difficulty did you play on, Trixler?
I'm playing on normal. What most people in Pathfinder defend valiantly in that game is it's unbalanced. They take months, almost up to years, to make sure that they talent it. They get rid of bug fixes, blah, 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 blah. They balance out certain things. So what Pathfinder does, and it should be a positive for a lot of people, but it's hard to realize, is that it's okay to mess with the difficulty settings. You can change things to make sure that your characters don't take a certain injury, so they take more damage in the future. There's like permanent death. There's all these small micro adjustments that you can do to make the experience for you. You can become your own DM. So normal, while it is normal, it's an unbalanced normal that they just kind of like have thrown into the game. They want you to take charge as a player and make it your own campaign, which is, you don't know that. There's no way anybody would know that, right?
Yeah. And I take the criticism. I was complaining about how some fights feel really interesting and dangerous and cool. And then there's a lot of fights where I'm just like auto attack, like let it just basically play the game on its own. Because it just was fodder that just felt, like, well, what am I even, why is there even an encounter here if I don't basically have to do anything? You know, I just let it auto attack my party and all that. Anyway, I understand it was more on me to tone that. And the options are there in this game. The options are there. I could have slid that slider and found the sweet spot. And perhaps it was a unfair criticism on my part last week. So I wanted to mention that.
To also build into that really quickly, I don't think it's unfair for you to have that criticism. I was like, someone that's actually, you're a good gamer. Like, you play lots of games. You go into a game, you kind of know what you're looking for or what you're moving into. Pathfinder's just a little bit too much if you're not prepared for it, and you have to be warned. So I think we just need to warn everybody and let them know if they are going to be moving into a game. Just know that it's going to be a bit of a pain in the butt. Like, I think there's a stat out there that if you give a person two options, 98% of people will choose something. But if you give them six options, like 5% of people will actually choose something, and the rest will panic and look for other sources, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a little too much. Just be aware of that.
Yeah, five difficulty settings for Pathfinder.
And each of those have like 50 adjustments you can do. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, this is serious.
Yeah. So kudos to them for sort of putting that in the players' hands, but I also feel like I just want, give me the, I mean, I feel like, I think about this a lot, and I almost always, I mean, 99.9% of the time we'll play a game on whatever normal is, because I feel like that's the one that the developers expect me to play it on. That's the game that they designed. And so I'm judging it on those terms, and I appreciate having difficulty settings. I think it's a useful tool. But most of the time, I figure like there's got to be one that's the one, you know, that's the one that the game is supposed to be. I don't know.
Can I tell you where I dropped it?
Yes.
I finished the tutorial. It took 19 hours. Literally, it's like, tutorial's done. Choose something. And you choose something. And it's like, oh, by the way, here's a war you're managing. And they literally give you armies and give you no information about running armies.
It becomes this big over, like it becomes a real board game at a certain point, like area control board game, which is cool. Like it's this other layer that shows up. It's like Baldur's Gate. And now it's also Civilization. You know, it's like, oh, really? Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's good. It's just hard.
What is the last game on your list? I don't recognize it.
Oh gosh, Chicory. Have you guys heard of Chicory?
I haven't. Have you, Christian?
Have you heard of Celeste?
Yes.
Okay.
Big fan. I'm looking this up now.
Okay.
You said the magic word for
before
Christian.
I say Celeste, I don't think platformer. I'm just saying Celeste because one, it's the composer for the music in that game, and the music in the soundtrack in Celeste is just revered by many as wonderful, and I feel like
she's
done it again in Chicory.
Yes, I did. Yes, I am familiar with this game. Yes.
And also it plays with the themes that are in Celeste, with like anxiety, depression, like self-doubt and whatnot. And I think some games may lay it on a little bit too hard. I think it's actually a bit of a trend right now to go down that route. But I think it's something that needs to be discussed a lot in games. And I think Chicory nails it perfectly with like, here you are as a creator, because how you play this game is it gives you a white canvas on every single span that you go through. I don't even know how to describe it. Like when you do a side scroll and it slides over to another map, like Zelda.
Screen, yeah.
Screen scroll. It does that, but every single piece of the map can be colored in by you. You draw and color and design this entire map around you because you've picked up this paintbrush from a previous paintbrush wielder, sort of like an avatar, that you are trying to help her come out of her depression. This entire storyline is about 8 to 9 hours long. There's boss fights. There's creativity allowed. And you put your own mark into this game. Like, if you actually just sit down and own it, it is one of the most beautiful games I've ever played. Mm. And with the music on top of it from the composer from Celeste. Gosh, I'm going to look up her name because I feel bad not even saying her name off the top of my mind.
It looks like a coloring book, like you're playing a coloring book.
You really are. It's wonderful. I think everyone should pick it up, especially if they were into Celeste. I just keep comparing it to that, but like that's the vibes I got the entire time.
Chicory, Chicory. I'm looking at it on Steam right now. It's $20.
Lena Rain was her name. Yeah.
Chicory, A Colorful Tale. Awesome. It looks really interesting and unique, and I love your description. And it's so pretty. You start on this sort of blank like coloring book with only black outlines. Mm-hmm. And then you get to add all these wild pastels to everything.
And what's cool is they teach you how to do art. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I can't draw anything. Like, I can barely get a stick figure done. But I can color. And once you learn how to color a little bit, you start to get a little more bold. You start to get a little creations. You start to add some more flair. And, like, suddenly this map where if you start at the very beginning of the game, you can kind of see how, like, crappy your art is. And then when you expand through the rest of the map, you start to see that you are actually improving as an artist. Like, it just makes you feel like you've done something special. Wow. That's another one of those games. Like, I don't know. In the last month, I've just gone through this, like, weird series of indie games that have just nailed it out of the park. And I think Chicory's up there as one of the few that I would recommend.
Chicory, A Colorful Tale.
I'm excited for you guys to tell me about Deathloop. Please tell me about this game.
Well, it's pretty great. It's pretty. I'm surprised you haven't been playing it.
Have you found the fun, Jeff? I have found
the fun. I am super into it. I think this next weekend I'm going to power through the end. I think the key was hearing you say how slow and methodical you are being with it, and that has been much more fun to really play it like a stealth game and not a shooter has been much more fun. And because honestly, I played Dishonored much more like a shooter than a stealth game. I really did. I got those powers and I was zipping around just taking fools out, and I think the ramp up with Deathloop is much more, or at least for me, I found the fun in being much slower, ignoring large parts of the map when I didn't need to do it. It's not a game where you have to like methodically mow down everybody. It's like, oh no, I need to go over here. So I'm just going to go over here right now.
And you'll methodically mow down everybody 10 loops from now. Like, it gets you there. But right now you don't. You just need to go to your apartment. You know, like that's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. It's fun. I've been watching some streams, or I guess some VODs of folks or clips of like people being death. And like, I kind of want to play that way. Cause like, after, you know, you play these encounters in these sections of the map in Deathloop over and over and over again at the same time of day. And it's not random. I think that was great in our conversation last week about how it doesn't feel like a rogue type game in that regard, because it's not randomizing what you're doing every time. And I've watched some clips of people being like, all right, here we go. And it's just awesome. You know, Colt's diving, running, sliding on the ground, using a power, teleporting someone, lifting up a whole mob of people, throwing them across the room. And then they'll like switch to, I forget the name of your pistol. And like, they switch to the pistol for the final kill. And I'm just like, I will never do that, but I feel cooler having watched you do it.
Yeah.
It's a game that welcomes, I think, that it rewards time spent in the world. And I think that's probably safe to say of most games, but I think what makes Deathloop unique in how it does that is it almost forces it in terms of, you got to do it again, and it's not randomized. You're going to do it again, but this time we're going to send you to a slightly different part. But you're going to cross through where you have been, and then you take the detour. Then you take the fork in the road. You don't have to. There's a sewer over here. Go find that. But it really encourages, I think, that methodical exploration of a map where you then will end up at a door that you can't open. It's like, well, I don't, why did I come? Okay. And then three loops later, you're like, I can open that. Oh, those jerks. They showed me that door because now I have the thing. I know where the door is. I don't need to go to the door. I bet there's something good behind that door. And then you get to kind of, you know, write your concert as you kill your way over there.
Yeah. 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 It's deserving all the praise it's getting. I'm surprised you're not playing it, Trish. Are you planning to jump into it?
Maybe. I get kind of Hitman vibes from it. And even after your guys' recommendation of Hitman, I sat down and tried to play it, and I just, I don't,
I watched James.
Yeah. I just,
you, you, I love you. I love you. And I was in that stream. You couldn't. I'm going to be overly harsh
here. Say it. Be harsh.
You couldn't disconnect from the. You were having fun creating the chaos, and I was screaming in my house like, "Trickster, stop! You're right there. Just do the." And you were like, "Hey, I'm right here. I'm about to do this kill. What if I take this spoon and throw it at that kid's balloon?" And then I'm like, "No,
that stuff is fun, but
yes, please do. I want to watch you do this, but also like, no, don't." And then you do it, and then it fall apart. And then I was like,
"I should probably try to beat it and then have fun." But like, I don't know what it is. Like, sometimes with games, I don't know if you guys have this. Like, there are certain ways to play it, and like, I like doing things that other people don't do. And then I just can't go to the regular way. I just can't do it. My brain breaks. Like. I did that with Neo yesterday. Like, my brain, like, an hour into Neo, I was just like, can't play this game. Sorry, guys. Yeah. And then I just turn it off, right? Like, and I feel that with Hitman. I wanted so badly to beat the first level, because I don't even think I beat the first level, and go to the second level, because you guys have praised it so much. And I think after 2 hours of trying, I was like, okay, Hitman's not for me. Well, let's go play a MOBA. And then it rolled
out. That's fine. You know, that's fine. Everything doesn't have to be for everybody. And, and recognizing that, I think, is useful. And I definitely have those games where I'm just like, I see that this game is good, but it's not good for me. It's not my jam. Speaking of your jam, though, Christian, you got a lot of other stuff on your playlist.
Do I? What do I have? Oh, Mike. So,
ooh,
I'll start, because I think Trix and I might be able to vibe for a little bit on this other thing. But I'll start with Sable, which is out now on Game Pass. It's a day one game. We talked about it when the demo came out. It's also available on PC, Steam. I want to say Steam. And this is a game that is an open world game. I have not rolled credits on it. I don't want to pretend like I've, you know, put 15 hours into it. I have not. I played a bunch of the demo, and then I've played some of the game now at release. But it still feels like a game that is an open world game without that main quest to get in the way. You know, like, your son isn't being dropped into a pit of acid and you must rush there to save him, but also go start a farm, but also go run a shop, but also soup up this car. It feels like it's just those smaller interactions that let you live in this beautifully desolate world that's still filled with hope and optimism in a way. It's not Mad Max desolate of like, the world used to be great.
Yeah.
Then they robbed it of all of it. It's like, this is the world we live in, and we're a loving community, and you were supposed to get this thing for your birthday, but life happens and this person forgot, but it's okay. You're still friends, and now go do this thing and learn about the spirit, and now you can float and fall damage won't kill you. And it's animated in a really quirky way where kind of like Spider-Verse, I think it's like on the twos. I'm not going to pretend to know my animation terms. Where your character is kind of intentionally not 120 frames per second. You know, it's not that. It's very a stylistic.
The herky jerky dancer.
Yeah, while the background is, and it's just chill. It's not Journey level of Zen, in my opinion. It's not quite Flower. I have had some frustration like finding a thing where I'm like, I'm on the marker. This is. Oh, I got to step to the left. Now I'm there. You know, there've been some of those moments, but for a game that just celebrates its world, I think I almost said Journey as chat typed in Journey. So great. As a game that just celebrates its world, I think Sable does it in a really cool way.
Just hop on your hover bike and scoot across the desert. It feels good.
And it looks pretty. And like I said, maybe something huge negative happens later, but it feels generally fairly positive, which is nice. I think kind of like maybe Trixler's last month of seeking out these other experiences where I don't need the apocalypse. Also, as we're recording, happy Last of Us Day to everybody. I love that game and I love that franchise. Today is Outbreak Day.
That seems like not a positive day.
We call it Last of Us Day.
I want to give a quick shout out to the day where everyone turned into clickers.
Thank you. We've come out the other side. I love that franchise. This is not that, right? Sable is not that oppressive. I have experienced a few what I would call hitches, and I've read about a lot more
So it seems like maybe if you are a Game Pass player and have a million other things on your plate already, maybe wait for Sable for some of these fixes or patches. I've heard of some pretty severe performance issues for some folks, and I've heard of some folks getting nauseous, and I don't know if it's because of performance issues or just because of that, you know, 18 frame per second animation style over a smooth background that is throwing people. But it seems like a game that is beautiful and can give you those Zen vibes, but also I think is easy to recommend.
Wait, Zen until you puke.
Wait a month or so. Right. It's like it clicks, or people are having game breaking, you know, problems with it.
This game, I just relaxed and then barfed.
That was a problem in Spider-Man Miles Morales, actually, because they had the Into the Spider-Verse costume that ran the frame rates. But because it was so smooth in the background, people just kept like having sickness problems.
Yeah.
I love that costume. I was like, I want to get that costume. I got that costume. I was like, I played it for 2 minutes. I was like, nah, I'm not playing that costume anymore.
You can turn that off in Spider-Verse, in Miles Morales, I should say, in Spider-Verse. In Miles Morales, you can turn off that perk with that costume if you just want to use that costume.
Yeah.
But Sable, I think check it out, but maybe wait a month, you know what it is. I love the idea of this open world game that celebrates its world, and just that's, again, maybe something changes at hour 10 and it's like, then the title card comes up and it's like, oh, now I'm shooting people, you know, but I don't think that's the game. And I like that. I like a game that just has you explore and find places and live in that space. It seems really cool.
Yeah. Sable. Anything else on your playlist?
Yeah, the reason I didn't play Kenya Bridge of Spirits is it's another flight weekend for Halo Infinite, and this weekend is team, and then next weekend is big team battle and something else. But this weekend is Slayer, Capture the Flag, Control. I think those are the three playlists. There's maybe one more. Oh, Trixler, it's so good. It's
nice.
It's so good. It feels like a comfortable blanket, and it looks beautiful. Like it
that
feels
shoots
like
you.
No, it doesn't. It fills me with love. Like I get shot, but the game's not doing it. You know, it's it's some jerk on the other team. It looks great. It has the Halo feel, while still modernizing so many things, like with, you know, the assault rifle, you can still left trigger in for a little bit. It's not, as you're talking about Halo 3, it's not this static cursor moving. It still brings things from modern FPSs, but in a way that it's not Call of Duty with a Halo skin. It still very much feels like that. And shout out to Spawn on Me and Khalif. He was talking on Twitter the other day about the dance that Halo provides and that Call of Duty doesn't. Like Call of Duty Firefight is, Trixler sees me first, I'm going to lose that firefight. Like, I might get two into his body and then Jeff can take him out. But yes, but I'm going to lose. But Halo, because of that shield regen that every game did for so long back then, and then games moved away from, but Halo still has, seeing me first isn't an instant, you know, I'll parry around for cover. I throw a needler shot towards, you know, the person that's chasing me, and now she's damaged for a little bit and I'm getting my shield recover. I'm going to switch over to my plasma grenades, flank left with a plasma. So I'm going to force her come to my right. So hopefully she doesn't have time to recharge her shield. I can switch over to my BR, pop off a few headshots, get that win, even though I didn't see them initially. Super satisfying. And just that shield regen.
I feel like this moment happened recently. It's been playing in Christian's head the entire time. This was the whole fight we had.
It's every game. It's well, not a lot of times I come around the corner and someone has a rocket launcher and I'm like, no, this is not going well. And then this flight, the addition of Control and Capture the Flag, there is no butt puckering feeling like running a flag back ahead of your teammates when you know there's one person from the other team at your base. And it's like, do I strafe around and wait for my team to catch up, but knowing that there's three also in pursuit of them? Am I going to just rush the base and plant the flag? Am I going to go for that feeling of delivering the flag? Or the other side of it is killing them while they have your flag to open up your base for a point is so satisfying. And the way that 343, I think, has, again, harnessed the feeling of Halo while bringing these making Sprint feel good in it, making Slide feel good in it. For a while, Halo, I think, struggled with that. It was like X was Sprint. Was that in 3 or was it an ability in 4?
And Halo Reach is when they started introducing Call of Duty mechanics, like the, okay. the big drop-downs, because that's when I fell off, because I was Halo 3. I think Halo 3 was one of the best Halo experiences I've ever had in my life. And I just kind of fell off because, one, I don't have an Xbox, and now that's on PC, I can finally get on and start playing. And I also played last night for, I intended to play for 30 minutes, and I played it for 4 hours. Because I just wanted to try it out. And I echo all your thoughts. I think they've done a great job of nailing Halo while also subduing the Call of Duty effects, but keeping them in the game. Like, they're still sprinting the game, but it's like, I'm barely running a little bit faster. Where they've introduced a speed to, which is where Halo and that dance comes in, is into the strafe. You have strafe boost now. So when you go into a strafe, you can actually like duke and dive people and win that battle that Christian was talking about when someone shoots you. And it feels so good. Like, that was one of my favorite things in Halo 3, is working on my strafing, making sure I could win that fight if I got the second shot. And this game really does nail that to a T. I think it looks beautiful. The only thing I have a problem with is on PC, when you're switching between your two weapons, which is like what Halo is all about, your two weapons, your 1-2 combo, the rotation of the second weapon. If you're in the middle of an attack animation or you're in the middle of a reload animation, it will not switch out the second weapon. It keeps pulling it back, and it's like an 80% chance, which I think is a bug. They haven't said anything online on Twitter or anything, but I'm hoping that it's a bug, because that's Halo to me.
Well, I know one bug, and thank you for mentioning the switching weapons. For me, playing on Series X, the Switch didn't work. It's like, again, that's Halo. I'm like, I have to be able to switch to my pistol.
Okay, so it wasn't working on Xbox either?
I have, but literally, I pulled up the controls, and it's like, why? And I'm like, why? Why? I could not. So I had the gravity hammer and a BR, which should be a pretty goat combo. Again, listeners of this show know this. I am the best FPS player in the world, and the game is in beta. And I can
play
really
against bots.
No, it's other people, but we're all figuring out the map. Then the game goes mainstream, and everybody knows that's the control point, and this is where the power up is, and then I lose it. But right now I'm pretty good. So I have a gravity hammer and a BR, and I'm like, I can ping from distance, I can run around close, and I couldn't even pick up two weapons. I would pick up one, and I'm like, this isn't Halo. I'm like, is it a perk? Did they bury Halo in an upgrade? You know, like kind of like you're talking about Kenya. Did they unlock a button behind?
It's Kena, by the way.
Kena, twice now.
Whatever. It's Ken. It should be a soft E.
It's Kena.
But there's no Y sound.
Yeah, it's Kena, 100%.
Kena?
It should be Kena, too.
it should be Kena. Welcome to my long history of mispronouncing names on DLC. It stands for Dude Loves Commessing Up.
Perfect.
And I couldn't figure it out, and then I finally went on to the internet, and it's just a bug. You have to go in and switch your control preference to a different control thing, and then switch it back, and all of a sudden, switch weapon worked.
That was literally the only frustration I've had with this beta. Like, the maps at first, I felt like were a little not sci-fi-y, but then, like, you play them, they feel smooth, they're great arenas, they have a lot of, like, different angles. Like, most of the maps, what I enjoy about Halo is you usually have, like, something right in the middle that just cuts you through the map. And if you want to take that risk and rotate fast, you can do it. All three of the maps had that I've played through the last few hours on. So, I think this could be a title that, if you were a fan of Halo 2 and Halo 3, could be a title that you may want to pick up on your PC and Xbox, because it feels smooth. It feels great, and it's reduced those Call of Duty elements that I did not like that much when I was coming off my Halo buzz from a few years ago.
Yeah, so that's the Halo Infinite multiplayer flight. There's also another one next weekend that introduces big team battle and some of the stuff. It's fun.
You ready to be in Warthogs and get the flags and run across the map together with Banshees trying to shoot us down, and we're like, no, not today, and then we shoot rockets and we take them all out, and then we all pog out of our minds? Because I can't wait for that.
December! Yes. Can't get here fast enough.
All right!
That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Tim, it's always awesome to have you on the show. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Dude, thank you for the invite, man. It's always so fun to talk games with you guys. Anytime.
Of course. We love having you on. Tell folks where they can follow you and all of the awesome streams that you do.
Yeah, actually, starting on Tuesday, I'm doing a 5-day subathon. New World is coming out, which is a PvP MMO that I am very excited for. I've always wanted to be at the start of an MMO and just play it through and see what it's like to see a community build. I had the chance with Heroes of Storm, and now hopefully I had the chance here with MMO. So I'll be playing that on Tuesday. I start at 4 o'clock in the morning at twitch.tv/Trixler, and I will be live for 5 days straight, just playing the game as much as I can. And you guys are more than welcome to join our guilds. We're going to do our best to run towns and, of course, keep everyone at bay and the other factions. And I hope that I can see you there. That'd be great.
I'm going to try it. I might hop on with you.
Heck yeah.
I'm pretty excited about this game. I've heard really good things about it.
It plays very well. They've done a lot of improvements. I mean, it's been in progress the last 2 years. It's been delayed and delayed and delayed. But I think it's going to be a game that people will really enjoy.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, not this week, but 5 years from now, I'm also going to join the game. But I like to join MMOs as they end. I'm the guy who creates account and runs over and watches the fireworks as the server closes and go, I can't believe it's ending.
Oh, wow.
You're too busy being the best player in a beta right now of a shooter.
Thank you. Yeah, once it goes 1.0, daddy's out. I have no...
Pre-release or bust, baby!
Yeah, give me a review code. I love it. Once it comes out, I'm like, lame.
Garbage.
Gross.
Played that 6 months ago.
Other people are good at it, the worst. Twitter's the best way to keep in touch. It is at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. I also have a newsletter once to twice a month. It goes out, Let's Chat Games. You can subscribe for free at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. And then I typically stream this here very show live on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. We usually record Sundays at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time, but like this recording today, and I think next week also, there are changes in our schedule from time to time. But again, Twitter or over on our wonderful Discord, as Jeff pointed out already, you can see those last minute changes as they come in.
Very cool. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. You can always email us here at the show, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, comments, questions, anything you'd like. Even a review of a game you think we overlooked, we'd love to hear it. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. If you want to hear me talk about some other stuff, I have other shows, including a movie and TV review show called The Filmcast. You can find it at The Filmcast Pod, I believe. The Filmcast Pod at .com. I should know that. Anyway, it's good fun. And we're doing a double review this week of Free Guy and Candyman. So check that out. It should be a good one. Also, I do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. I do that with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. Good way to learn something and laugh along the way. My sports show is called Fan Controlled Football. Actually, the title changes every week because it's fan controlled. You can find that at twitch.tv/FCF on Thursdays at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And The Dungeon Run, which is a live play Dungeons and Dragons show wherein I am the DM, making up the story for the folks to play through. You can find that anywhere you get podcasts by searching for The Dungeon Run. It's also on YouTube, past episodes. And we stream live Wednesday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/TheDungeonRun. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Trixler, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, I've been through a weird phase lately where I've been watching murder mysteries or weird like groups coming together and stuff falling apart and just watching the chaos ensue. And if you have HBO Max, there is a show called White Lotus that is on HBO, and I highly recommend it. It is one of those murder mystery shows if you're into that. But this one's a bit of a different spin. The way it's presented is normally you go into a murder mystery and you find out that someone's dead. Someone's died. And they usually name that person. And then from there, they backtrack and try to figure out who the murder was. And this one, they show a casket and they show one character. And then they just go to this retreat. And your job while you're watching this show is to figure out who the murderer is and who gets murdered. And the great part about this entire show is a soundtrack. That is the main character for me. I highly recommend it if you're into that kind of stuff. It might be a bit of a slow burn if you're not into this kind of murder mystery type of show to watch. But if you are, jump on it. It's good.
Totally agree. I had a blast with that show. Very, very fun. Are you watching Only Murders in the Building?
No, I'm just finishing up Nine Perfect Strangers. How's that one?
So good. It's Martin Short and Steve Martin. And Steve Martin created it.
What's the title of it?
Only Murders in the Building.
We'll watch it 100%.
I think it's on Hulu, I want to say.
I feel like I'm an old man now just watching through all of these murder
mysteries.
So
good.
I love them right now.
It's so funny and fun and smart and it's great.
Okay.
It's about people that love real true crime podcast making their own true crime podcast. It's really funny.
All right, I'll check it out.
Christian Spicer, what's your parting gift?
As someone who has yet to go to the movie theaters again, as I'm still consuming things at home and my kids are too young to be vaccinated, I cannot recommend the movie Shang-Chi, but I can recommend the soundtrack. It is so good. It's up there with Black Panther or Into the Spider-Verse in terms of the movie soundtrack doing not just, oh, it's one of the singles off of Drake's album, or here's a little Nas single that's pulled from it, which is also an incredible, but I don't need to recommend that because everyone's listening. It's so good. But it's such an incredible Shang-Chi soundtrack, just bangers from top to bottom. Highly recommend. It does not spoil the movie. At least I don't think so, because I know nothing about the movie. These are just songs. You know, it is pop or rap style music. Really, really good. I highly recommend checking it out, even if you haven't seen the movie like me and you're waiting for Disney Plus.
Movie's very good. I will say that. Very good. I think you'll love how the music works in the movie, too. It's great.
I'll be like, I love this part. This is my favorite song.
I want to recommend something as my parting gift that a friend created. J.P. Kuvert, who is a friend of the show and a friend of mine and has created numerous T-shirt designs and awesome stuff over the years, including the world map for the Dungeon Run. JP Kuvert created with me. I am a huge fan of his art. He's a cartoonist and a creator. And he sent me this thing called Dragon Town. Oh, Christian has one too. Look at that. Dragon Town. It's Flick Silverpen's Guide to Dragon Town, which is these adventures that JP has been making. He illustrates it. It's basically a zine, 90 pages full of content. If you want to run, it comes with a map, a beautiful map. If you want to run a D&D campaign that is lighthearted and fun and whimsical, I mean, there are there's a whole beekeeper adventure where you get information from a beekeeper and fight bees. And I mean, there's maps and characters and scenarios. It's just phenomenal. He has really knocked it out of the park. It's an entire world that you get in a, you know, illustrated and with tons of information. It's perfect for running an adventure with younger players, but I think older players would have a great time with it too. I'm just so impressed with what he did. He sent one to me and Christian. You can get yours on his website, jpkuvert.com. I believe jpkuvert, COOVERT.com/shop. And then Flick Silverpen's Guide to Dragontown. $15, well worth it. I hope you support JP, and I think you'll really dig the product. It's great.
He also did the stickers and pins for Consequences for me, and it's great. And we also have his Maker Comics Draw comic book that my kids love. Everything JP does is easy to recommend.
Yeah, it's charming and heartfelt. He's just a good person, and it comes through in the things that he makes. Also, we got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Brandon Lee. Brandon writes, "Hey, I'll keep this parting gift brief. A great book to pair with Deathloop is The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. I won't say more as it's a book best opened cold, but it pairs like fine wine with this game. Keep up the great work." Well, that's mysterious, Brandon, and I'm intrigued. Again, The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle is the name of the book. If you're digging Deathloop and its concept and ideas, Brandon thinks that's a great one to pair with it. I'm anxious to find out what that's all about, because that sounds really, really cool. The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Trickster and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those fun bumpers. Thanks to all the folks hanging out in chat and making the show better in real time. We appreciate you. And thanks to each and every one of you that download us and listen each week. We're so grateful. We couldn't be here without you. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.